Hey, it's John Engle, and I'm excited to share that registration is now live for Grid Tech Connect Forum California. Join us in Newport Beach, June 24th through the 26th for the Interconnection event. We're bringing together utilities, developers, regulators, and advocates to take on one of the biggest challenges facing the energy transition, both at the DG and utility scale levels. Click the link in the episode description and use promo code PODCAST to save 10% on admission. Join our partners from the Department of Energy, NREL, Southern California Edison, PG&E, CAISO, Sunrun, NG, Convergent, AES, and so many more for this impactful event. We'll see you there. Hello and welcome to another episode of This Week in Clean Tech, a roundup of the week's biggest stories you need to know in climate and clean energy in 15 minutes or less. Today is Friday, May 10th, 2024. I'm Renewable Energy World Editor-in-Chief John Engle, joined once again by Clean Tech PR veteran Mike Casey of TigerComm. Mike, how was ACP in Minneapolis?
It was good, my friend. I got back last night. I spent 4 days with just fewer than 10,000 of my best friends. So it was a good show. It was
biggest takeaway. I'm going to throw the question you give to all those reporters that we bring on. What if someone didn't read your story, what would you tell them as the biggest takeaway?
I think it is that this industry continues apace, and you really saw a lot of signs of maturity that you would not have seen at that show 3 years ago, 5 years ago. No way. So it's very, very different neighborhood.
Awesome. Well, we want to thank all of our listeners who have been sharing those story recommendations, listening, of course, and nominating Clean Techers of the Week. You can do that at REW@clarionevents.com, and we'll have that link in the episode description as well. All right, Mike, get us started.
Tom Randall of Bloomberg writes, battery recycling shatters the myth of electric vehicle waste. I love this one, John. I love this story.
All right, so EVs require more critical minerals than typical combustion engine cars, and it takes a lot more energy to mine and refine those minerals, so much energy that Bloomberg NEF estimates it takes 25,000 miles of driving to make up for that extra embodied carbon. But that's changing. A new analysis found battery recyclers like Redwood Materials can use recycled materials to cut that number down closer to 15,000 miles. Mike?
Battery recycling, still in its youth, but it can already recover 95% of key materials. And it will continue to get more efficient as it scales up to meet the growing supply of spent batteries. As the U.S. grid runs increasingly on carbon-free sources, battery recycling becomes more commonplace. We can expect that payback period between EVs and internal combustion cars to continue to shrink. I love this, John. Great story. All right, number two from John Engle.
Yeah, this one is Jillian Ambrose from The Guardian wrote a story called Renewable Energy Passes 30% of World's Electricity Supply. Mike, I like these occasional milestone level setting articles. What did you think?
Me too. Climate think tank Ember recently came out with a report stating that renewable energy has officially passed 30% of our global electricity supply, up from 19% in 2000. Solar power is scaling faster than any known power source to date. 2024 marks the 19th consecutive year it has been the fastest growing electricity source. John, what do you think?
Yeah, carbon pollution from the power sector was predicted to peak in 2023, and it looks like that's actually playing out. The report projects a 2% global decrease in fossil fuel generation next year, driven by the growth of renewables. At COP28, world leaders agreed to target 60% of global electricity from renewables by 2030. Now, to pull that off, countries have to triple their renewable capacity in the next 6 years. It's promising, but that's a pretty big feat. Mike, number three.
Alexander C. Coffin from Huffington Post writes, a century-old company the government owns wants to solve a big energy problem.
Yeah, so that headline tells you we're talking about TVA. The Biden administration wants to triple global nuclear power supply with U.S.-made reactors and prevent China from dominating yet another green energy sector. But the U.S. isn't building reactors here. We've seen cost overruns and delays last over a decade for a nuclear reactor to connect to the grid in the U.S., making it hard for investors to shell out that money. One potential lever for Biden is the Tennessee Valley Authority.
the source of quite a bit of consternation in the power sector, since it is a federally owned electric utility, but often does not act in a way that is supportive of the White House's goals. Congress hasn't adjusted the TVA credit limit in 45 years, despite inflation. So efforts to increase TVA's budget are now underway, but now there are questions as to whether they should prioritize nuclear or look into solar, wind, and batteries, which they have almost none of. Mike. Sorry, right. Was that loaded? I feel like that was a loaded toss to you.
Well, I'm used to them. I mean, we're in episode. This is our 35th episode. So if I'm not used to that, I shouldn't be playing this form of rugby, man.
Yeah, and before you get to your half of the story, there are a couple of AP pieces out this week on TVA that I think people should look up because, as we know, about half of their electricity generation does come from zero carbon sources, nuclear and hydro. They have literally no solar. They have a couple of battery sites, I believe. But there's also some kind of confusing dealings in the background over pipelines and new gas. And so there's a lot going on here. Sorry, Mike.
Yeah. Well, TVA, the people who brought you the massive coal ash spill, nearly half their electricity does come from nuclear. And as you note, diversifying their portfolio with solar, wind, and batteries, the actual clean stuff might be a better option. It could be also much cheaper and less risky, considering that nuclear projects have an extensive history of delays and cost overruns and disasters, but I dither. Plus, if the U.S. wants to reduce the cost of building new nuclear reactors, we need to build in bulk, but I'm thinking private utility companies won't want to take on large-scale projects, considering it could impact their profits. While the U.S. wants to catch up to Russia and China in terms of nuclear, the logistics are muy complicado, as they say in Spanish-speaking companies.
We're recording early on a Friday this week, which we normally don't do. We're usually afternoon recorders. So now Mike is rattling off what little Spanish he has. We don't have a reporter this week. Who knows what's going to come with story number four. But it comes from the New York Times. The story, giant batteries are transforming the way the U.S. uses electricity. Mike, what's new with batteries? My script says.
What isn't new with batteries? John, our listeners won't realize I had to wipe away a tear because John Engel had us laughing so hard before we started taping. So, and I'm going to blame
Mike said he was going to come into this recording with zero prep because it's early and he's mad at his staff for booking us at this time and seemed to equate that his abilities are on par with mine to just dry run a broadcast. And I made that comment only to flub within 2 seconds of starting our intro. And Mike could not recover for a total of 5 minutes. So that's the background. All right. You want to talk about batteries or what are you doing?
Let the record show I was not the one who went on to this digression. My friend did that. So I'll bring us back with some adult supervision. California has installed more giant batteries than anywhere in the world apart from China, largely because the state pulls so much electricity from the sun during the day. It needs to quickly make up that gap when the sun sets. It's typically been done with natural gas peaker plants, but batteries are playing an increasingly important role. Between 7 p.m. and 10 p.m. on April 30th, batteries supplied over one-fifth of California's electricity. We love to talk about milestones, John. That's actually a pretty cool one, I think.
It is a pretty cool one. And it's great to see that industry scale, something we need to be cognizant of in California, the highest electricity rates to customers in the country. And that is a problem. And it's not batteries. It's not the fault of batteries. But it is something that both the entire industry, regulators, you know, third-party developers, utilities need to ultimately figure out. You looked like you wanted to say something there. So feel free to jump in.
I just want to know if I get the microphone back to finish my points, John. But
what do you mean? What are you talking about? That was the handoff, wasn't it? What else do you have?
No, it was an... It was an engineered handoff by you, but all right.
Oh. Go on. Why don't you just do the rest of the story?
Of course, we're seeing rapid growth in other states as well. Over the past 3 years, U.S. battery capacity has grown tenfold to 16 gigawatts, and that number is expected to double again this year. All right, John, the microphone comes back to you yet again in
Are
this
you
episode.
Done?
Yes, sir.
Are you done?
Yes, right. Mr. Engel.
So I still think I made an important point around electricity costs, and California does need to be cognizant of that. Battery costs, however, have dropped by 80% over the last decade, largely due to the expansion of the EV industry, which also helps the grid scale folks. I think batteries are starting to make day-to-day intermittency seem like less of a challenge, or at least something that we can tackle together with technology that's proven out and in the field. Batteries have also cut congestion on transmission lines and help prevent blackouts during heat waves. However, scaling up batteries involves complications like community opposition, trade disputes, and if states want to rely solely on renewable power, they're going to need a lot of it, and they're going to need it to last longer than 2 to 4 hours like lithium ion, the darling choice among energy storage provides. Mike, our last story, no reporter this week, so we might even give you back some time despite all of the incoherent rambling that we've done on this episode.
And John, I'm warning you, I have the no pen out, so
right.
Just keep it holstered. Yourself henceforth.
Keep it holstered.
Our last story is written by Tim McDonald from Semaphore. Biden's tax credits for sustainable aviation fuel allow a big role for corn ethanol. Mr. Engel. Your brilliance.
Another good one from Tim. We love featuring his stories on the show. New Biden administration rules allow corn-based ethanol to qualify for tax credits under the category of sustainable aviation fuels. Interesting. This could bring investment to SAF and production facilities, but with corn as a major contributor, environmentalists argue this will convert land into cornfields and increase food prices. Tim argues this is a bet on rapid EV adoption. As more people switch to EVs, there will be less demand for the ethanol that goes into gasoline, freeing up farmland for cleaner alternatives like SAF. The tax credit also pushes SAF suppliers to prove their products' emissions, which could push the ethanol industry to transition to a more sustainable role. I feel myself being maybe a little bit more cautious than Tim. Mike, I know you have a lot of thoughts when it comes to big ag lobbying and corn-based ethanol.
I do. I used to work at Environmental Working Group many years ago, and we did the farm subsidy database, which has gotten, I think, more visits than McDonald's has sold hamburgers over the years. So got very familiar with these issues. Unlike the lifetime of tax credits for solar and wind, which lasted up to a decade, these credits expire at the end of the year, so they are subject to change. Plus, Wall Street still deems SAFs as very risky. That's their quote, since SAF production requires building big factories that use new and improved tech, and no airlines have committed to signing long-term offtake agreements. That might prove to be a bit of a problem, Mr. Engel. So I will say we're about out of time. We need to go to our clean tech of the week. But hey, I've got good news. We have 4 people now who have agreed to be on our clean tech of the year evaluation and selection committee.
All 4 of the listeners. They all raised their hand, huh?
You are sabotaging our show.
It's a Friday show. You know, you gotta be a little looser. By the time this is published, it's gonna be the end of the day-ish. You know, you're gonna be winding down, starting to think about that happy hour that awaits you on whatever think tank is gonna buy you dinner tonight, Mike. So I think people are gonna enjoy this one.
John, my half of this audience is listening to this on their treadmills and their 5 a.m. runs. Your half of this listenership is listening to this while they're drinking their drinks at happy hour.
What are you talking about?
They're trying.
You think there's this underground clean energy rave scene or something?
Absolutely.
All right, clean tech of the week. Poor Laura for having to be the clean tech of the week on this episode. Laura has Hampshire, Director of Stakeholder Relations, Social Impact, and Sustainability for AES Clean Energy is our choice this week. Laura participated in a panel discussion at Clean Power about messaging clean energy projects effectively. As community opposition and misinformation continues to slow the deployment of clean energy, this topic has become crucial for developers to learn more about. So congratulations to Laura for being the clean tech of the week on a topic that is very important to Mike Casey. So great to see that.
Good. And I want to thank Dana Claire Redden. She is our 4th member of the clean tech of the year evaluation panel. Aaron Petrie, our first listener. She's agreed to come on, join Brian Willis and John Christens. Thank you to all 4 of you. They'll be convening in the fall to start looking through our clean tech of the week picks to pick our clean tech of the year. So pretty fired up about that.
Watch for the then you'll know the highly anticipated clean tech of the year is on its way.
All right. And I want to thank our wonderful producer, Brian Mendez. I don't know that I'm going to actually thank Claire Quirin, who I am totally throwing under the bus for all of our laughing, because she's the one who came with the bright idea of doing an early morning taping on Friday morning. But Alex Peterson, always steady, always helpful on this.
Never Claire. Early. Alex, Claire, Brian Mendez, our producer, they're all great. Please subscribe, yeah. Give us feedback, and share your story recommendations, and of course nominate those Clean Techers of the Week. You can read all of the articles we discussed this week by clicking the links in the episode description. Mike, thankfully this one is done. Goodbye. I hope I don't see you for another week.
Take care. Bye.
Hey, it's John Engel, and I'm excited to share that registration is now live for GridTech Connect Forum California. Join us in Newport Beach, June 24th through the 26th for the Interconnection event. We're bringing together utilities, developers, regulators, and advocates to take on one of the biggest challenges facing the energy transition, both at the DG and utility scale levels. Click the link in the episode description and use promo code PODCAST to save 10% on admission. Join our partners from the Department of Energy, NREL, Southern California Edison, PG&E, CAISO, Sunrun, NG, Convergent, AES, and so many more for this impactful event. We'll see you there.